The best performing asset of the last decade was not Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, or real estate. It was Bitcoin. Hi, I'm Saumitra Srivastava, and this is the Bridge Project Podcast. Today, we are going to talk about cryptocurrency and the legal framework around it. We are glad to have Mr. Siddharth Sogani on board, the CEO of Cribaco, who set out into his entrepreneurial journey with a vision to remove scams from the industry and make the industry more regulated. Cribaco has one of the largest comprehensive research database focused on blockchain and crypto ecosystem in the world. Thank you very much for joining us, Siddharth.
Thank you so much, Saumitra. Thanks for having me here.
Could you explain the application of blockchain technology in currency to a layman? How different is it from regular fiat currency like paper notes we use today?
All right. So I'll try to explain as much as I can given the constraint of time. But it's a decentralized currency, as everybody knows. But what does decentralized actually mean is that it is not issued by a government or a central bank, you know. So basically, when we spend our 100 rupee note, it says, I promise to pay the bearer. So that means the Reserve Bank of India takes the responsibility to honor the value behind that currency note.
Yeah.
So it's basically a debt instrument which we use. But in Bitcoin, it is a peer-to-peer transaction. So it's a debt-free instrument. So, whatever transactions we are doing are on the blockchain, it is transparent, and it can be seen how it is getting mined as an issued, and how many people are using it, how many wallets are transacting it. The entire ecosystem or the transaction framework is visible to the public, whereas in the centralized
fiat
currencies, they don't have it, open. We don't really know how much money was collected during the demonetization a few years ago, right? So those figures are not disclosed. We don't know how much gold is there with the Reserve Bank of India. If they say that we have got 10,000 tons, we have to believe them, A lot of information is not there. So there is no transparency. And here there is transparency because it is decentralized, and also it is not issued by any government or a central body.
So the only source of trust is the users who are using it.
Yes. So though I'll try and explain it through. There is something called as Metcalfe's law of telecommunication. So suppose I have a mobile phone, and I'm the only one with a mobile phone on this planet. It is of no use to me, right? I cannot call anybody.
Yeah.
But if you have a mobile phone, my mobile phone's value increases because the value proposition which we have now is that I can call Saumitra from this phone. Uh-huh. And then how many ever people are joining in the network, the value of my phones increases, as in it becomes more, there are more users to it. It's more accessible, then people can call me, I can call people. So, just like that, in Bitcoin, the more people use it, the more bigger the ecosystem becomes. There are higher chances of, trust because more people trust in it. So the value, suppose I have a pen and I say that, I always give this examples in my other webinars as well, say if I have a pen and everybody in the room agrees that this pen is worth, say, 10,000 rupees, I can trade the pen for 10,000 rupees. So it's not the pen which has the value. It is the consensus of the number of people in the room who believe that the pen is for 10,000. So here the value comes from the consensus, and that consensus is also, I'm trying to interrelate two concepts here where the consensus and Metcalfe's law are basically adding value to the Bitcoin's network. So that's how it is getting its value from.
All right. For the benefit of our listeners, I would like to clarify that Bitcoin is only one kind of cryptocurrency. So if we use the word Bitcoin, that does not mean that there are no other cryptocurrencies.
Yes.
Also, I want to ask if the cryptocurrency is merely an application of blockchain technology, or there's something other than this as well?
So when I say cryptocurrency, mostly I'm referring to Bitcoin, because it has the largest number of users, and you know, it is a decade old, and you know, there are more number of use cases. It is known to a lot of people, and yeah, the market cap is the biggest, right?
Yeah.
So what happens is Bitcoin uses not only blockchain, but it uses peer-to-peer transaction capabilities. It uses encryption. It uses internet. So blockchain was just integrated into the entire framework to solve the Byzantine general problem. So blockchain basically adds a layer of trust and transparency to something which is decentralized in nature, right? Otherwise, people won't trust it.
All right. So would it be fair to say that whenever any crypto transaction is performed, then it is recorded in multiple computer system in a decentralized way? So it is almost impossible to, you know, fake the recording of these transactions, since every of that computer system has to be, you know, hacked for this purpose.
Yes, absolutely. Whenever there is a transaction, say Siddharth giving one Bitcoin to Soumitra, it becomes public. I mean, it's a pseudonymous wallet ID. Say Siddharth has a pseudonymous wallet ID of XYZ, and Soumitra has BCA, you know,
so
anything
that
like that.
So that can be anonymous.
So it's not anonymous completely. It is pseudonymous. So if there is a solution which says that ABC wallet belongs to Siddharth, the anonymity factor is not there. So, I mean, you can see ABC, but you don't know who this ABC belongs to. So that is not completely anonymous.
So is that database in the public domain, that this pseudonym is referring to this person? Like, can anybody
see
that?
It doesn't show that, but it was important to have a public address, you know. So when we have a public address, which is a set of codes, it is said to be pseudonymous, not anonymous, because in anonymity, there is nothing which signifies the recipient or the sender.
All right. So in the 2020 Supreme Court judgment that basically uplifted the ban from cryptocurrency, which was imposed by RBI, the 2000 crore Bitcoin scam was pointed out by RBI. So there are definitely certain security concerns which everyone has, especially the bureaucracy. So how do you respond to that?
So it wasn't a Bitcoin scam. There are smart contracts. I'll just explain why this scam was referred to, right?
Yeah.
So there are smart contracts. I can go make a smart contract and say that this is Siddharth coin. And I can go to the people, tell them, try and convince them that if you buy Siddharth coin, I'm going to start a sugar factory, and I want to raise money. You buy Siddharth coin, and you know, once my factory goes up and running, you can trade your Siddharth coin in the market, or you know, give it back to me, and I'll give you sugar in exchange.
That's so an ICO, right?
That is an ICO, right?
Yeah.
So this is a smart contract which can have several uses. So if the Supreme Court judgment referred to a few cases. There have been a few scams, right? I mean, hundreds of them, but the few prominent ones which are known in India, like OneCoin, Gain Bitcoin, BitConnect Cash, where people issued these tokens and received payment in cash or Bitcoin or Ethereum or, you know, other relevant currencies, or, you know, and then they said that we will offer you a fixed return. So if you invest 1,000 rupees, we'll give you 10 bucks a day, or say 100 bucks a month, or whatever the scheme is. So it's a multi-level marketing scheme, which usually goes bust when there are not enough people to fund on top of it. It's like a pyramid scheme, right? So if you Google pyramid scheme, you'll know how it works. So these Gain Bitcoin, and you know, there have been a lot of chit fund scams, and you know, Hira Gold, and you know, there are hundreds of such companies, and it's not new. You know, people issue tokens or some security or some stock or some instrument, and you know, they raise money and then they promise you fixed returns. So the reason is it uses the same kind of technology which Bitcoin uses.
Mm-hmm.
So people say that it is, you know, and you know, when those guys are going and selling their smart contract, they sell to the guy that, you know, have you heard of Bitcoin? This is better than Bitcoin because this gives you more value. This has this. This is the value proposition. You're getting this, you're getting that. So people always, so a lot, people don't have clarity on how Bitcoin works, you know, so you can't expect them to understand a second layer or level of ICO things, right? So people refer to such scams as, you know, Bitcoin scams, but it is not Bitcoin.
These are new coins.
These are new coins. Absolutely. Which are exchanged for Bitcoin. So if they want to accept money into their MLM scheme, they will ask the buyer that you go to some local exchange, give your fiat money, buy Bitcoin, and only through Bitcoin you can buy my coin. Right? So people say that it is a Bitcoin scam, but no, Bitcoin cannot be a scam, because if it would have been a scam, it wouldn't have survived for last one decade, right?
So for these scams to happen, that means that you have to have Bitcoins to be a victim of such a scam, because you are not accepting cash and only you are accepting Bitcoin.
Not necessarily. People invest in US dollars also. They invest in USDT also. So it's just the most widely used mode of accepting payment. But there have been several cases where people even give money in their local currencies.
Yeah, this sounds reasonable, because in the 15 July Bitcoin Twitter scam, the accounts of the celebrities and billionaires were hacked, and not the cryptocurrency accounts. So definitely there's some kind of security which is tough to break.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, if you want to have a 51% control of the Bitcoin network now, you need to have a quantum computer, and you need to deploy a lot of hash power to do that. So of course the security level is not there yet. The hackability is not there yet. So we can say that it's really, really secure, because the network is too big now.
Yeah.
So it has happened, but then, you know, doing it doesn't make sense, because the moment you do it, you will lose the Bitcoin's value. Suppose you own a Bitcoin, say, for $10,000, and, you know, you attack the Bitcoin blockchain. Of course, it will go public in minutes that the Bitcoin blockchain was compromised. So the Bitcoin which you own will lose its value immediately, you know. It will crash. The market will crash.
Okay.
So what will you achieve by doing that? You know, it's stupid. And even if you do that, the other nodes, the remaining 49% people will realize that this guy is trying to fidget with the entire blockchain. So they will kick that node out. You know, it's on the basis of voting. They will kick it out. So what you will manage to do by doing that 51% attack is just try and get two or three blocks of Bitcoin. You know, it will just give you like, say, 10, 15 bit. Like right now, 6.25 is the block mining reward. So, you know, you might have might end up with some 18, 19 Bitcoin. That's all.
All right. So in your last webinar hosted by Khaitan & Co., former finance secretary Mr. Subhash Garg proposed to classify cryptocurrency as a commodity or an asset class and not a currency. How do you view this?
So, as far as we have understood with his comments and everything, I see that they have a problem of the word currency. Because, you know, even in the webinar, it's on the record, you can go and check it out. He has said that, you know, it's a counterfeit currency. And I tried to correct him that, you know, it's not a counterfeit currency. It's not there to challenge rupee or the dollar or something. It's just an alternative for those who need it, right? So it's not there to disrupt the existing ecosystem. But it is there for those who require a peer-to-peer currency to work with.
So you also think that it should be a commodity or asset class over currency, like legally speaking?
It depends, you know, if the Reserve Bank of India is okay with it calling a currency, it can be a currency. So basically it's something like gold, which which used to be a currency, and you know the governments came in, they took control of gold, and then you know they said there is a 1:1 ratio with the rupee and stuff like that. So and also it is a commodity because it can be traded. It is an investment because people invest in it and you know speculate that the price will go up in future. So it is falling in all these three verticals. If you are using it to settle a transaction, you can say it as a currency, or you can even, you know, give gold and settle the transaction. So if we don't use the word currency, I don't think so there is a problem in the near future. You know, it's all right. It will still be the same Bitcoin.
Yeah, so I believe that it is the most important question as far as crypto is concerned in India, because classification will basically decide which regulator will have full jurisdiction. Because if it is a currency, then the government will have the heaviest role. And if it is a commodity or export-import thing, then FEMA would come into place and FEMA regulator will have the role. And if it is a security, then SEBI will be the prime regulator. So this is actually a very important question.
See, what if suppose I'm exporting my t-shirts to somebody in the US.
Mm-hmm.
The current process requires me to, you know, make those t-shirts, export it through the customs route. It is given to the customs department. They make a shipping bill. They make a checklist. You know, all those procedures are there. Then the goods are shipped. It reaches to the buyer in the US and he sends me US dollars
mm-hmm.
in return, which goes through the Nostro-Wostro route.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes to my local bank. Then the bank converts it with the RBI treasury and then credits the money in. And during that process, I also have to submit the shipping bill of lading and
the section
other relevant
7.
Documents to the bank saying that goods worth X amount were exported.
Mm-hmm.
And the money which I've just got are against this. So
mm-hmm.
if this money is not coming, the enforcement department or the revenue departments will come to you and say that because the money is not come through the right route, there is a possibility that you have done money laundering, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've just settled the transaction through other means.
Mm-hmm.
So if we are exporting the same thing and we are accepting Bitcoin as a payment,
mm-hmm.
the Bitcoin has to, so there has to be a gateway which converts the Bitcoin into fiat, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for that, the RBI must recognize it or hold a reserve, you know, like how the US dollars,
mm-hmm.
RBI has a treasury, right? So banks trade with the treasury, fix a price. They say that, you know, you've received $1,000 and let's say that 75 rupees is the dollar price, you know, they will trade it with the treasury and give the money to you. Same
mm-hmm.
process has to be followed if a payment comes through Bitcoin. So here the RBI must recognize it as a currency or at least a mode of settlement
mm-hmm.
so that the FEMA Act is not applied, because it's nothing wrong, you know, if you are accepting
yeah.
a currency using a different mode of currency. It's like you're instead of receiving US dollars, you are receiving British pounds or say Japanese yen or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
You are receiving Bitcoin, but the RBI must recognize it at a point of time. So if you say that it is just a commodity,
mm-hmm.
I don't think so. I'm not sure about it. I'm not from any legal background,
mm-hmm.
but I think there is a gap. It has to be fixed. So RBI has to come in and recognize it as a mode of payment or something. And when that is said, I think the word currency should be applied somewhere.
In response to this, Germany defined cryptocurrency a digital representation of value that has not been issued or guaranteed by a central bank or public body, and it does not have the legal status of currency or money. So they are actually recognizing it as a digital representation of value or as a settlement thing, that there is some value and people can exchange their goods for this value, but they're not recognizing it as a currency. But I think this definition makes sense. What do you think?
Absolutely. So because it is not issued by a government or a central bank, like I said earlier, it
mm-hmm.
cannot be ever termed as a legal tender.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in between the past prime finance minister Arun Jaitley, He had said a few years ago that, you know, it is not a legal tender because it cannot be a legal tender. It is not issued by a legal body. It is a decentralized, it's a network. Internet cannot be a legal network, right? It is it is everywhere. So when we do, when we say that it is not a legal sender, people misunderstand and say that Bitcoin is not legal, you know, stay away from it. It's not legal. No, it's not like that. It it can never be a legal tender. It is a decentralized currency.
Yeah. Recently, as the SC declared the ban on cryptocurrency unconstitutional, where do the RBI and SEBI right now stand with respect to transacting in cryptocurrency? So, for example, we have many cryptocurrency exchanges operating in India. So, it is not clear under which laws are they operating. To ensure the banking compliance, they do follow some know your customer norms. And one of the arguments which was presented in the case, which was before SC, is that they are willing to standardize their KYC norms in toto in future. So, as a Bitcoin professional, do you have these kind of legal queries?
So that's exactly why we need regulations. Currently, RBI, SEBI don't have any regulations to address to problems relating to crypto or blockchain related projects who are dealing in cryptocurrency. So that's something which we called as unregulated. And that leaves a very big gap in the ecosystem, because if I want to start a crypto company in India, there has to be some kind of a compliance, set of compliances or licenses or currency licenses, like how the forex traders and, you know, currency exchanges are using that. You know, there is a license issued by the Reserve Bank. But if I want to start a crypto company, there is no license. Or even if I want to say that, you know, Siddharth Crypto Private Limited, if I use the word crypto, the MCA will reject the application because they say that crypto is not a legal tender, and, you know, a lot of other things.
Yeah. Even
so right now there is no regulation, and that's exactly why we need a regulation, so that if a payment is coming, how it should be treated. If an international payment is coming in or going out of the country, how it should be treated. If somebody has invested into this commodity, how should the capital gain tax will be treated? What is the minimum compliance standard for an exchange to be followed? And, you know, because it's a completely new ecosystem, if somebody wants to do an ICO, what is the minimum compliance required? If you want to do an IPO, you need to have a 2-year-old company, minimum assets you should own, the revenue should be going upwards, and, you know, the project feasibility, have to get certifications, and there are so many things you need to have, minimum underwriting and all that before you go public. But in ICO, you don't have those things. So because the government has not yet understood what an ICO is, they are unable to draft a framework for it. That's exactly what we are trying to do. We are building a representation with one of the top lawyers in India, and trying to explain the government, you know, where, what all laws and frameworks we have to adhere to when it comes to, say, a payment or tax or GST, or, you know, see, Indian ecosystem is really complicated. There are so many verticals. There are state rules, there are central rules. I don't know. I mean, it's GST took like a few, I think 15 years to come into action, right?
Yeah, so yeah.
We can't expect crypto to come so fast, but I just want to add here once a little, like, you know, I don't want India to lose this opportunity of Industrial Revolution 4.0 when India wants to be on a forefront. It's like Mr. Modi is promoting India as a digital economy, digital India. We are having payment solutions, one of the fastest and cheapest payment solutions in the world, right?
Yeah.
And it's really, really good. And it's growing. And here, if we come and say that decentralized currency, which is like the most talked about digital payment in the world, we are going to ban it. It is going to be a little weird, you know, because people will judge us. Out of the G20 nations, I think 18 countries are okay about it. They have certain regulations for it. And if India says that, you know, we want to ban it, I just think we will lose a big opportunity. Because even the internet era, in the 90s, India came out with Information Technology Act in 2000. So those 8-9 years, a lot of talent and opportunities were lost. People went to the US, they went to Singapore, the countries, you know, like companies like Microsoft were built, but India could have done it. You know, the top developers in these companies are Indians.
Yeah.
And they are there since the 1990s. So if we don't regulate it, if we don't shout out to people saying that, you know, you can start a crypto company, start experimenting, build a $1 billion company in India, right now, I think we will lose the opportunity.
Many countries have actually regularized it, like Japan, Canada. The only country I know which has banned is China, right?
No, they haven't banned it. So they have a banking ban, like how, you know, trading in, if you cannot invest into crypto by giving Chinese currency, fiat currency, and you can't exit. But mining Bitcoin or doing settlement or doing a peer-to-peer transaction is fine. You know, China is almost controlling the mining right now. You know, they have more than 50% of the mining hash power in the Bitcoin network. So given that, we can't say that China has banned it. You know, in the draft bill, it said that even mining is not allowed.
In our draft bill, which has come last year.
Which was led by Mr. Garg.
Yeah, I have read into certain Indian crypto exchanges legal terms. One of them said that it is not a financial institution, bank, credit union, trust, hedge fund broker, or investment or financial advisor, and is not subject to the same laws, regulation, directives, or requirements applicable to such person. It further says that it is merely a technological platform. So clearly, it is not going to be regulated if we only take into account this particular contract. So how do RBI and SEBI treat exchanges? Like, you have answered in detail that how this has no regulations, but even then, if somebody wants to set up a crypto exchange, what kind of regulation are in practice?
Currently, there are no regulations as such. That's exactly why we are saying it's unregulated. You know, all the only thing which is getting applied as of now is GST, which they are taking on a very higher slab. I think 18%. I'm not sure about it. But suppose I'm an exchange and I'm providing a service of accepting fiat payment and giving you cryptocurrency in return. I'm providing a service as well. And on that service, I'm charging you a GST. Beyond that, it doesn't do anything. It is self-regulated. They take the KYC, they keep it with them. I don't know how they verify the KYC or anything, but it's just a compliance which they are trying to follow. They accept Aadhaar card, PAN card, or a photograph of you holding the exchange name and the date. You know, they have come out with several regulations. I mean, several self-created compliance. And they don't, the moment they give you the Bitcoin, they don't tell you anything further, right? So there is, even if you say buy a Bitcoin at $10,000 and you sell it at $20,000, it is the user's responsibility to file tax for that profit, right? So the exchange doesn't tell you to do anything. They are just providing a service. That's all. So that's why we need a regulation here, because exchanges are the gateway to the ecosystem. You know, if you want to enter into cryptocurrency, you will have to give your Indian rupees to an exchange and buy Bitcoin. Only then you can enter the ecosystem, or else your friend is giving you a Bitcoin directly into your wallet, you know.
I also think it is
a very big responsibility for the exchanges.
Yeah, there's a fiduciary duty.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the government should recognize it. Yeah,
they must.
Okay, so the widely celebrated crypto expert Andreas Antonopoulos predicts in his book, The Internet of Money, in the coming years that crypto will revolutionize the currency in a way automobiles did to bullock cart. Do you believe this would be true? Like, can conventional banks go out of business? Is it a reasonable fear to have?
See, crypto is not here to take control of anything or, you know, disrupt the entire ecosystem. But yes, the governments want control. so that they can control the entire, I would say, populace and where the transactions are going. It's valid, it's right, it's important for the governments to monitor, because then there will be a lot of anarchy. They must see what the money is being used for. Is the guy giving taxes? But it won't put banks out of business. Yes, initially people, in the long run, people would not want any third party. They would like peer-to-peer transactions, like but right now we are sending emails directly from one person to another person. So it won't push banks out of business, but it is
Their
equally
functions will
important.
change, I think.
Yeah, it is equally important for the banks to adopt cryptocurrencies as soon as they can
Many
in
have,
order
right?
to survive. Otherwise, they'll lose the opportunity.
Yeah, many banks have, like JP Morgan, I was reading about that. These banks have been performing talks with Bitcoin experts, and some have got a research wing, and some even accepts Bitcoin as a settlement currency.
Correct. It's because they know that you like it or not. Cryptocurrency, I mean, Bitcoin is here to stay, because if it a lot of people say that, it's like the tulip bubble. Tulip bubble was busted in a few years. Bitcoin is here since last 10 years. And it is visible to everybody that what is happening. In the tulip bubble, it wasn't visible. So we can't compare apples and oranges here. But it is important for big, large organizations, governments, central banks to understand what the tech is and start getting involved in it. Otherwise, they'll just lose the opportunity, because the system is still growing with or without them.
Yeah, I think their functions will change because people will even then deposit their money for getting interest, and people will still take loans, and they will still invest in stock markets. So I don't think, my personal view is that I don't think that you will have completely banks getting out of business, but their responsibilities will change.
Right.
Have you watched the American movie, The Big Short?
Yes, it was a great movie.
Yeah. So the general public has always a suspicion of the banking industry, especially after the 2008 financial crisis, and in India in general. So do you think that could the blockchain technology lead to responsible banking?
Yeah, I mean, you see Big Short. There is one more movie called The Margin Call, which was, I think, based on the Lehman Brothers on the 2008 crisis.
All right.
So this basically highlighted a very big gap in our financial ecosystem. The government is printing so much money, the financial institutions are manipulating. Like, if you see Margin Call, they came to know that tomorrow the market is going to fall. So let's sell as much mortgage-backed securities before the market realizes that it is falling, So it is a manipulation. They could have, because they have so much power, they just manipulated the market to at least, they knew that the fire sale is gonna happen. So it is important
It was
that
basically fraudulent
transparency.
banking, right? Ban
Absolutely. And
banks knew.
there have been cases that a lot of big banks were involved in corruption. Banks go bust. They have done, like, HSBC incident is quite famous.
Even they were involved with the violent drug cartels,
Absolutely.
which resulted in even murders and all.
Absolutely. See what happens is HSBC paid a fine of a few billion dollars, which was just worth a few weeks' revenue for them,
That's
right?
clear.
So the large banking institutions can do a crime with a white collar,
And there
pay
were
a
no
certain amount
prosecutors.
of yeah, absolutely. They just paid a fine and they were allowed to walk out. But if an individual faces such kind of a problem, he might have to go, sacrifice his entire life in the jail. So during the 2008 financial crisis, this guy Satoshi Nakamoto must have seen this gap. I personally think that even he was a victim of the fire sale, or he must have sacrificed some assets, or so he saw this thing
Oh,
and he realized.
that's
I'm
interesting.
just it's just assuming this could be. We don't know who he is, But I'm just assuming that, you know, he must be a victim and he must have realized that this is a problem. There has to be decentralization and transparency. We don't know how much gold the government have. We don't know how much manipulation the banks are doing. And a decentralized system is required. It was the need of the hour. He started Bitcoin, and from there, Bitcoin till today has gone up 900,000 times, something like that, you know. Bloomberg came out with some report a few weeks ago that, you know, it is the best performing asset of the decade. Even you started in your conversation that it is in fact the best performing asset of the decade, because it is solving a problem which nobody else is doing. So I just think it is really, really important that cryptos come into focus. But yes, blockchain applications are coming back to your question, I just went off track a little. Blockchain applications are important in banking, and they can really make a difference provided they are decentralized. All right. A centralized blockchain is not going to solve the problem of trust. You know, it's like if you're using, I don't know if you have Bitcoin or not, but if you're using a Bitcoin wallet, you dearly don't interact with the blockchain. You know, it's like how we use so many wallets right now available in the market. We don't know what they are doing behind. So blockchain is not something which the user interacts on a day-to-day basis. They just believe, they are just told that, you know, it is run by blockchain in behind. But if it isn't on a decentralized blockchain, transactions can be viewed by the public. People can join the network or exit the network at will. It's like an open source code. So decentralized blockchains have great applications. I don't think so. Centralized blockchains are going to make a big difference.
This 2019 bill actually proposed that rupee shall be converted into digital currency. So that is some kind of centralization, right?
Yeah, I mean, the central bank digital currencies, CBDCs, are nothing but money on your mobile banking wallet, right? There is no difference.
Yeah, actually, practically it is. But is it
all? It will just eliminate the use of Nostro and Vostro accounts, which are taking, you know, which is making the global transactions slower and complicated. That's all. If you have a CBDC, the money can be settled immediately. Of course, there are several advantages to it. Yeah. But it is not solving a problem of trust, because it can still be manipulated.
Yeah. So is it a centralized application of blockchain, or is it totally different?
It is centralized. It is centralized application of blockchain. Okay. Because there are no nodes, right? So in order to hack the Bitcoin blockchain, there is a miner sitting in Iceland, one is sitting in China, right? So you have to basically hack their systems and to manipulate it. But if it is a central bank run digital currency, tomorrow if the central bank wants to manipulate a transaction, they can always go back and change it. So it changes on the entire blockchain. It's unhackable, but of course the control is with them, because they are the ones who are mining it or, you know, running the nodes of it. So it is not solving the problem.
All right.
But yes, there are several advantages, and I want India to be one of the first few nations to come out with their CBDC, because, you know, then we won't be dependent on Nostro or Vostro accounts. Right now, when we are exporting to the United States, on the shipping bill, we have to write values in US dollar. Right? Because US dollar is an international mode of settlement right now, or GBP or anything else. But we don't really export in INR until and unless US says to passes a bill to do so.
Bitcoin will actually, this blockchain technology will actually solve this problem of
absolutely
an international mode of settlement.
Yeah, I mean, there won't be just rupee, there will be hundreds of currencies. Like, I believe by 2027 you will be seeing a currency war, you know, like the Chinese will be rolling out their CBDC, US dollar will be on blockchain, you know, Indian rupee will be there.
Yeah, that's one of my questions.
So it's like a currency war. Like, you know, then the user will have several options that, you know, which currency I have to use to settle that transaction. And see, investment is something else. We don't know if the dollar is going to go up or down. It's a completely different trading aspect of it. But the use case is that the user will have several bank accounts, I mean wallets, which have several currencies which he can use to settle transactions.
So that was one of my questions, that since anyone can set up an ICO, that is initial coin offering, post-regulation, can we have too many currencies in the market and therefore chaos?
So a currency is ideally just a currency. Like Bitcoin is just a currency. You cannot run a smart contract on top of it. I mean, you can, ideally you can, but it is too expensive. So for that, we have something called as Ethereum, which also acts as a currency, and it also has a blockchain, right? So if you want to run, start your own cryptocurrency, you use Ethereum's platform, which is already a decentralized blockchain.
All right.
And you say that instead of Ether, which is the token on the Ethereum platform, you are using Soumitra coin.
All right.
So it will just take you 10 minutes to create a smart contract on the Ether blockchain.
Okay.
It is really, really simple. And you can launch your Soumitra coin, which is backed by the Ethereum blockchain, and you go decentralized. And then you offer that to anybody. Now it's up to people if they trust Soumitra coin or not. So there will be a lot of currencies. What your question is saying, there will be a lot of coins and currencies, but it all depends that, you know, it's again Metcalfe's law of telecommunication, right? If people believe in Soumitra coin and they see that Soumitra coin is backed by Soumitra's vision, and you know it is going to be here forever, they may use it. But if they think that, you know, it's just a bubble, they will not use it. So the user has a lot of options.
So we can see in the future, can we see like Reliance coins and Tata coins and so on?
Absolutely. I mean, those will be more of securities, SEOs, you know. So, I mean, it's a really, really good aspect. Currently, we are using, if you want to buy a stock of MRF, see? So MRF, I think it's in few thousands, I think 40, 50,000, you know, everybody cannot buy an MRF share. But if MRF releases its shares as a STO, people can buy that stock in fractions.
That's one of the advantage of cryptocurrency, that any fraction can be actually bought and sold, right?
Absolutely. And the other advantage to it is, right now when we buy a stock, it gets settled through NSDL or the depository CDSL and all, you know, all these depositories which holds your stocks. But if you are using an STO, the moment you buy it, it is immediately transferred to your wallet. So there is, you won't need a central depository. So this is a very, and you know, NASDAQ and a few international exchanges are already running prototypes, because there won't be any T+2 days to settle a cash stock transaction. It will be immediate. You know, the moment you buy it, it will be like a peer-to-peer transaction. Exchange will be just there to match the trade. But, you know, the moment you buy and the moment the guy sells it, you will have the stock in your wallet. Like, and that can be verified on a blockchain.
Okay. Yeah. The speed is very important.
Yeah.
Okay, how do you respond to the security concerns of an anti-blockchain lobbyist? Can Bitcoins be used to fund drug trafficking and terrorism? Or like, these are real concerns by bureaucratic or government agencies as well. So because there is a complete deregulation regarding who is going to use it, especially if it is a peer-to-peer transaction. So do they not possess the risk of higher crime?
See, when they say drug trafficking and all that, it just makes, I mean, you know, I just think it's a little stupid to give a comment, because see, if you see the entire crypto industry is worth $350 billion right now, and the global market size is over $85 trillion. So even if say 50% of cryptocurrencies in the market are used for illegal purposes, the existing market, and if we see the current market size, you know, US dollar is the most widely used currency to use for, you know, doing terrorism or for financing terrorism or drugs and everything, you know. Like if you just see Pablo Escobar, when he died in 90s, His net worth at the time of his death was $30 billion. Right? So it is, if you take the top 10 drug lords, I'm sure it'll be a few hundred billion dollars in net worth. If you, and according to the American Chemical Society, in 2009 or 10, I don't remember when the report was released, but 90% of US dollars had traces of cocaine. So what do we see from this? What do we walk out of this entire thing is that, you know, there is, if, why are you blaming Bitcoin, which is so tiny, which is traceable money? I mean, you know, if I'm going to pay you for some drugs, I won't use Bitcoin, because if I'm, you know, Bitcoin can be traced. There is a Merkle tree for it, you know, like from A it's going to B, from B it's going to C, from C it's going to D. And if D uses an exchange which is KYC verified, you will catch hold of D and ask him, where did you get the money from? He will say, I got it from C. You will catch hold of C, you will ask him, where did you get the money from? He'll say, from B, and so on. You can reach to A, who actually did the wrong transaction. So it is leaving a trace. But if I'm giving you in US dollars or cash, I just give you and the trail ends.
Okay, so the
There's no proof.
cryptocurrency is in fact better than regular fiat money in terms of
Absolutely.
crime.
Absolutely. And it is too tiny. See, no matter what, there, like internet right now, it is, there are hundreds and thousands, maybe billions of advantages to internet, right? The call which we are having right now is running through internet, right? If you're using a Volt enabled phone, if it is Jio or something, the call is actually going through internet. It's not using GSM. So this is the advantage of internet, right? There are disadvantages also. People do hacking, they do cyber crimes and everything, but yes, there are solutions to it. There will always be some evil which we cannot, I mean, you know, that there have to be, that's the reason why police and cybersecurity cells exist, right? So I mean, it's a part of the ecosystem, but for that you cannot blame Bitcoin, saying that, you know, Bitcoin is just used for terrorism. It is solving much more. Like a guy who is there in Africa who doesn't have a bank account, he can become the part of a financial ecosystem by just downloading a mobile app on his $50 phone. What else do you want, right? So that is a problem which Bitcoin is solving. Why don't we see that?
We cannot have a really digital India or digital economy without actually regulating cryptocurrencies, right?
Yep. See, by regulating, I say that India will capitalize the opportunity. But even if India doesn't regulate, it will not stop cryptocurrency from evolving,
Yeah,
because it
actually,
is
that was my
decentralized
question.
in nature.
That is there any way that the government can actually ban cryptocurrency or blockchain in general? Because
No.
India can't, yeah, because the government can't, couldn't practically ban porn while there is a clear directive that porn is banned. But
See,
these transactions
wherever
possible.
there is internet, Soumitra, there will be Bitcoin. You can't stop it. So the approach of a government or a regulatory body which says that we want to ban it, you have to first ban internet to ban it. You cannot ban internet. And if there is internet, there is block. You can access the source code and you can transact in Bitcoin.
Can this transaction happen on virtual private networks?
Wherever there is internet, it is not necessary that you need a VPN.
Okay. No, if the
Yeah.
government tries very hard to ban it or something, then people will always.
It can. If you get access to any wallet or you hash the transaction on the core network directly, you can do it. It's virtual private network won't, I mean, of course, a lot of people use virtual. See, through a private tunnel or not, if you have access to internet, you can do it.
Okay, all right. Yeah, in the previous episode, I discussed the need of permission from RBI for any foreign exchange transaction in Docomo versus Tata case. So what happened was that an arbitral award was passed in a foreign-seated arbitration in form of damages, that is a particular value of money, from Tata company, which is an Indian company, to entity Docomo, which is a foreign company. Now, what happens is that whenever such a foreign exchange transaction happens, there is a requirement to have a permission from RBI. But since this was a foreign-seated arbitration, Indian law was not applicable. But the dispute was that if there was a need of permission from RBI, because there was indeed a foreign exchange which was happening. So that was entire dispute. But now my question to you is that if Tata, which is an Indian company, wants to pay to Docomo, which is a foreign company, can they pay in bitcoins and do away with the government regulation?
See, I think, I'm not an expert on what you just said. I don't really know the case so well in detail. Mm-hmm. But if we are settling a transaction which is of that size, I believe we must take permission from the government or inform them. See, I'm a person who's not a, I won't go rogue, you know. It's like, I want to keep the government in loop when we talk crypto. It is really, really important. You know, we don't want people to stop paying taxes and, you know, find out loopholes. And there is already so much tax evasion in India, right?
Yeah,
so I don't want people to not inform the government or take permission.
Actually, this is one of the central fear of government, that what about regulation and what about taxation and so on.
Yeah, so in order to tax something related to crypto, there has to be regulation. And the only way we can see, like, we have got red and green lights on a traffic signal, right? Mm-hmm. The government has made a rule. But if you jump the signal, you need to monitor that somebody has jumped a signal. So now there are CCTV cameras, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody is violating a regulation, the government must know that this regulation is getting violated. In order to do that, they must draft a framework and see how they can implement it, right?
Yeah.
So just by making the regulation, it's not going to solve the problem. They must be on their toes and monitor it like the way they are doing for the current US dollar transactions, exports, imports. FEMA is already there. And there are so many regulatory bodies which are monitoring the cash flow in India and going out. There are AML laws. There are departments which monitor these transactions. So there has to be something like that for crypto also.
Yeah. I recall we have discussed before the recording that whenever you have to export goods, then you have to approach RBI and fill a declaration under Section 7
of the FEMA Act.
And basically, you have to take permission for getting any value from a company which is based out of India. So similarly, when I am trading in Bitcoins, and if I am getting that money through a Bitcoin exchange, then the government, if the government regulates that Bitcoin exchange, then the government will know that such a transaction happened.
Right.
Otherwise, there would be no regulation, there would be no surveillance. And basically, closing the eyes will not make the Bitcoin disappear, right?
Yeah. I mean, when the draft bill was made, you know, they said that all activities related to crypto shall be banned, you know, something like that.
Even holding
crypto. How can you possibly implement it? If I have Bitcoin in my wallet, like if it is a hardware wallet and I have Bitcoin in that,
mm-hmm.
how will the government know that I'm holding it, right? So when the government is making a statement that holding Bitcoin is banned, they are unable to actually implement it, right?
Mm.
So we should see that how practical is that regulation? What tech solutions must be used? What compliance standards should be used? It won't happen overnight. It will take, I'm sure, a couple of years. If the government decides to do it, they can do it. Definitely, there are so many solutions to make these things easy. Developed nations, Japan, Germany, US, they already have things in place. You know, you can freely trade Bitcoins and report to the governments. In fact, I think in one of the countries, I think Japan, you can even pay your taxes to the government in crypto.
Okay.
So if that is there, then it is superb, you know, like they are there in the system.
Yeah, Germany clarified in March this year that crypto custodians qualify as financial institution. So whatever regulation apply to financial institution will also apply to these crypto custodians.
That's wonderful. And that's the way it should be, right? You know, like financial institutions, custodians, exchanges, wallets, they all should have some compliance or KYC. No, I mean, see, if we go to see, Bitcoin can still be anonymously traded on the blockchain directly. But you know, it the ease of operation by using a compliant wallet is more, right? So for example, we use Paytm or MobiKwik, and there, you know, there are so many wallets out there to make our electricity bill payment because the ease of operation is more. Now today, if I have black money, I can go to the electricity board and make the payment in cash.
Yeah.
But I will see that, you know, Paytm is compliant. It is so easy. I'm saving so much time. Just black money, bro. Let's pay it through Paytm. It'll take you 1 minute.
That's right.
So if there are more compliant and easy solutions out there, people will use that and not use the anonymous ways of doing it by doing so much jugaad.
What do you mean when you said that 20,000 jobs would be created when regulations around cryptocurrency come at the right time? What kind of jobs are you speaking about?
Currently, the companies from India who want to do crypto business, they are not operating from India. They are going outside India in nearby countries like Singapore and, you know, Malta and all these places. So when they are running a business, they are in requirement of resources, right? Like they want content writers, they want traders, they want IT people, they want HR, they want all those things, right? What all the company is requires to run. Now, there are a lot of people in India when the government will issue a license to run a crypto company, or they allow crypto companies to develop or trade. There will be so many job opportunities created because people will just jump into it. You know, there'll be like 500 companies incorporated in a few months, you know, and all those companies will require content writers, ID people. And, you know, there'll be so much inflow of money and resources from all over the world for these 500 companies, for example. So it will create a lot of opportunity for new jobs, a new vertical in an unprecedented ecosystem, which will be really, really good.
All right. So my final question is, well, you have answered a lot of it, but my final question is, what will India lose if it does not make any law for cryptocurrency industry, or worse, ban it?
Opportunity.
All right.
In one word, India will lose a huge, huge opportunity to be on the forefront of global digital transformation.
All right. Thank you very much, Siddharth, for joining this interview. We have learned a lot out of this, and it was really
a pleasure.
Yeah.
And really well-researched questions from Mitra. Really, the flow was really wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
This has brought us to the end of our episode. Let us know if you have any feedback. Follow us on LinkedIn for more such episodes and updates. The views expressed in the show are for educational purposes only and do not constitute any legal advice. Thank you again for joining us.